This week, deeper consideration of Joshua 10, 12 through 14, in which the sun stood still. The context of the passage is this, that Joshua and the Israelite army were in hot pursuit of the armies of southern Canaan, and to truly capitalize on their enemy's retreat, they would need more time, an extended period of daylight to continue chasing, searching, and fighting. In response to Joshua's prayer, God stopped the sun from setting to give him more time. I wanted to give this its own message because I thought it serves us as an excellent opportunity to contemplate first the finer details of a truly huge event, but also because it gives us cause to consider God's supernatural intervention into the world. Your passage is short, and so I will read it to you. It is Joshua 10, 12 through 14, from the English Standard Version. At that time Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord gave the Amorites over to the sons of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, Sun stand still at Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Aijalon. And the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, until the nation took vengeance on their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Jashar? The sun stopped in the midst of heaven and did not hurry to set for about a whole day. There has been no day like it before or since when the Lord heeded the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. Let us consider this miracle then in full, the historical record, the physics, the language, and so forth. First off, what exactly happened? Well, Joshua asked for the sun and the moon to stand still, and then the sun and the moon did so. Immediately, anyone with a second grade education is going to object, and they're going to say, Brother, that's silly, because everyone knows that the sun doesn't move. The earth moves around the sun. Okay, I hear you. Cool your jets. We're going to get to that. But for the time being, can we accept that this is Joshua's description of what happened? He was looking at the sun, and from his perspective, it stopped. You also talk about the sunrise and the sunset, and no one objects. So, take this as an objective, literary description of a strange phenomenon, and let's try to figure out what happened. So the question then becomes, why did it look to Joshua like the sun had stopped? Let's contemplate how this could have happened in some finer grain detail than the scripture gives us. And I'm going to cite some online articles for this. First, I have an article from Creation Ministries International at creation.com, and then I also have an article from the Times of Israel, an online Israeli newspaper. Creation Ministries outlines three possible ways that Joshua might have rightly perceived the sun to be standing still. Their suggestions include that there was a refraction of light, or, my favorite suggestion, a slowing of the earth's rotation, or also maybe a wobble in the earth's axis. The refraction of light theory is, essentially, that the sun actually continued moving relative to the earth, but that as a result of some kind of miraculous light refraction, it appeared to everyone on the ground that the sun had stayed still. And since Joshua's point was evidently to ask for more daylight, that would have gotten him what he asked for. I think there's a weakness there, though, and that a theory of light refraction suggests not that the sun stood still in the sky, but that it simply looked to Joshua like the sun stood still in the sky. And that seems not to fully resonate with the passage. The passage says that the sun stood still. Light refraction doesn't really match that description. The second theory on how this happened is that the earth stopped rotating, or at least very significantly slowed rotating, such that Joshua's side of the earth pointed at the sun for a longer period of time. And at this point, I want to address more fully the argument that the scriptures are inaccurate in saying that the sun stood still rather than saying that the earth stopped rotating. Critics often point out this passage and suggest that the Bible teaches geocentrism, that is, the idea that the earth is the center of the universe, or at least the solar system. And those critics are certainly right to say that the earth revolves around the sun, but only from a certain broad frame of reference. If the Bible is in fact referring to a slowdown of Earth's rotation by saying that the sun stopped, it is not at all inaccurate for the Bible to say this, and it is not correct to say that the Bible has contradicted science here. In the first place, everything in the universe that I know of is moving. Our galaxy, the Milky Way, is moving. Our star, Sol, the sun, is revolving around the center of the galaxy. And our planet is moving around the sun. So yes, the sun is moving. It just isn't moving around the Earth. Or at least, it isn't moving when the solar system is your frame of reference. And that's pretty obvious because anything that you use as a frame of reference is, by definition, not moving. That's what a frame of reference is. But if we contemplate simple physics here, we know that all motion is relative. When everything is moving, we can't really say that anything is stopped, unless it is stopped relative to something else. This is like when you're driving a car, and you pass someone in the other lane, but then match their speed and ride beside them. If your speed and direction are the same, you are stopped relative to each other. That's bad driving, by the way, so don't do it. But then, when you're driving a car, everything in the car is stopped relative to that car, and the car is your frame of reference. If someone crawled into the back seat, you might say that that person moved back relative to the car, despite the fact that the car was actually moving that person forward relative to the Earth. The point then is this. Joshua's reference point was the Earth, and relative to that point of reference, the sun had been moving, and then it stopped moving. How this was achieved in terms relative to the solar system isn't the question. Joshua was correct in terms of physics in saying that the sun had stopped. The language here is perfectly accurate in physical terms. The sun had indeed stopped relative to him. And I want to make sure I'm totally clear here. I'm not claiming geocentrism, and I don't think that the Bible is either. I think that the Bible is making an accurate claim in terms of physics that the sun stood still relative to the earth. The scoffers who say that the Bible is wrong to describe it this way do that because they have a second grader's understanding of the solar system, but haven't taken a class in physics. So whether we want to take the language of the passage as a literary claim from Joshua's point of view, or as a claim about astronomical physics, both are very much correct. But in the event that we're talking about a stop of the Earth's rotation, there are some other factors to consider. Primarily, if the Earth suddenly stopped spinning, what would happen to all the things on the Earth? Wouldn't we all be knocked down by the sudden jolt of the Earth stopping while we kept moving? Wouldn't there be cataclysmic tidal waves and such? Well, in a word, no. To quote the article from creation.com, quote, "The Earth at the equator moves at about 1,600 kilometers per hour, 1,000 miles per hour. A car traveling at 100 kilometers per hour can be stopped comfortably for the occupants in a few seconds. Something traveling at 1,600 kilometers per hour could stop comfortably for passengers in a few minutes. This scenario need only imply that God slowed the rotation of the atmosphere, oceans, and Earth simultaneously to prevent any tidal wave effect and any heat buildup inside the Earth due to friction from still rotating liquid layers of the Earth's core. And after the long day was over, the whole process would need to start up again." End quote. So while a slowdown of the rotation of the Earth might seem like an impossibly complicated mess at first glance, the effects really wouldn't be so great if there was a gradual slowdown. And furthermore, I will remind you that we're talking about the creator of the universe here. He created Earth, he created the sun, he created gravity and inertia and all the complex physics governing everything. It is as easy for him to manipulate the physical variables governing the universe as it is for any computer programmer to manipulate the variables governing a video game. Except easier. Because God is the ultimate store of all information and the ultimate processor of all information, and the very glue which holds the universe together. So if he wants to stop the spin of a planet, he can. And that itself is an interruption of normal physics. If he can interrupt that, it is no more difficult to interrupt any other physics involved to keep conditions on the Earth running as normal. But we'll talk a little more about that when we get to our lesson. A third possibility, which involves a disruption in the turn of the Earth relative to the Sun, is the possibility that the Earth continued rotating as normal, but an abnormal wobble occurred in the Earth's axis. To quote again from creation.com, quote, "This involves a precession of the axis of the Earth, wobbling slowly so as to trace an S-shaped or circular path in the sky. Such an event could have made it appear to an observer that the sun and the moon were standing still, but need not have involved any actual slowing of the rotation of the Earth." End quote. And I'm going to be completely honest with you, I don't really get the concept here. I understand the idea that the axis of the Earth is wobbling in addition to the Earth spinning, but I pulled my globe out and tried to figure out how this could keep the sun in the sky longer and couldn't really find a way to make it work. But I'm going to trust that someone with more advanced skills in geometry than I have came up with this answer. However, I can confirm that the axis of the Earth is indeed wobbling, so however it would need to wobble to keep the sun up in South Canaan, I suppose that was a possibility. I've also linked an article from Wikipedia on the phenomenon of axial precession for your review. But the times of Israel suggest to us yet another possibility, that Joshua's stopping of the sun actually describes an annular eclipse. Now, on reading the passage, it sounds initially nothing like an eclipse. Didn't Joshua tell the sun to stop moving? The sun obviously doesn't stop during an eclipse. Let's take a look back at the critical portion of the passage. Joshua said, "Sun stand still at Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Aijalon. And the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, until the nation took vengeance on their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Jashar? The sun stopped in the midst of heaven and did not hurry to set for about a whole day." But what if the translation was just slightly different? What if when Joshua said, "Sun, stand still," he actually said, "Sun, stop," not meaning so much "stop moving" as "stop shining"? In fact, this would be a valid, even if less likely, translation. The Hebrew word in question is damam. According to Strong, it means to be dumb, by implication to be astonished, to stop, also to perish, cease, be cut down, or off, forbear. And so while "stop shining" might not be the first meaning that comes to mind, it would certainly be valid. And what about the moon standing still? Well, as it turns out, the Hebrew word amed, which describes the moon, means simply to stand, or even to take one stand. So in saying that the sun stopped, we might also say that the moon stood in front of it, or even stood up to it. Some might object that an eclipse doesn't match the descriptor, that there had been no day like it before or since. I think that this is not much of a concern, though. The book was written by Joshua and often speaks directly to his own times and experiences. In his lifetime, there was no day like that before or since. However, I personally reject the eclipse theory because it doesn't seem to be in the closest harmony with the passage. Our passage says that after stopping, whatever stopping means, the sun did not set for a whole day. The word for "set" could just as well mean that the sun didn't pass by or come back, as in passing back out from behind the moon. But eclipses don't last for a whole day. They don't even last 10 minutes. And the passage does say without question that it did not pass for a whole day. I don't really see how we can square that issue. It is also difficult to see how an annular eclipse would have helped Joshua, and if it wouldn't have helped him, I don't see what the point was. We get the impression from the story that Joshua needed more time. An eclipse wouldn't do that. The sun stopping would. Maybe darkness could have helped hinder his enemies from fleeing, but eclipses really don't get dark enough to help with that, and especially not annular eclipses. So there's really no real effect on the battle there. Maybe his enemies would just be put into a panic by an eclipse, taking it as a sign that Jehovah really did fight for Israel. Or maybe the eclipse would have distracted his enemies. But these seem like less than satisfactory answers. Whatever the case, astronomers have identified an annular eclipse which occurred over Canaan round about the time when the conquest took place, and believing it to coincide with this story, they have used it to date this battle as having occurred on October 30th of 1207 BC. Are they correct in their presumption that this was an eclipse? I don't think so, but I suppose I can't say for certain. It is an open-hand issue. Think what you like about it. As for me, though, as I preach through the rest of the message, I'm going to make the presumption that the sun did in fact slow its motion relative to the sky, likely due to a change in the Earth's rotation. Of course, if the world stopped turning for a day, or about a day, we would expect this to be a major event globally, one that people would have certainly noticed and recorded. Ancient peoples paid close attention to the motions of the heavenly bodies. Particularly, people in the Americas and West Africa might have recorded a long night, while people in Asia, Europe, and East Africa would have recorded a long day. Well, do such records exist? It's hard to say. I've read that the Egyptians had a record of a long day, which was recorded by the Greek historian Herodotus, and that one Fernand Crombet, whomever that is, translated some hieroglyphics describing a long day, which resulted in a flood. I've read that the Chinese once had a record of a day that lasted 10 days, and if that's true, then they might have exaggerated this event. I've read also that the American Indians had legends of a very long night. Unfortunately, I've been unable to independently confirm any of these accounts. Obviously, 3,000-year-old records from disparate tribes, many of which didn't even keep written records, are hard to come by, and when they are available, their authenticity is debated. I'm hesitant to take accounts I find online at face value unless they come from trusted sources, and I'm not finding much to go on here. I've provided one link discussing some such materials in the library. Perhaps you can do some research on your own and enlighten me if you find something I haven't found. However, the book of Joshua does provide for us one other source about the story of the sun standing still, that being the book of Jashar. The book of Jashar comes with its own questions, though, so let's consider it. What is the book of Jashar? The word Jashar means righteous, or righteous person, so the book of Jashar is the book of the righteous. Well, we have only two references to it, one here and one in 2 Samuel 1:18. Here it records the fact that Joshua told the sun to stand still, and there it tells of David's response to Saul's death. From this we gather that the book of Jashar must have been a book for recording important historical events in Israel. As for what else it may have recorded, we don't know, and we probably won't know until Jesus gets back, because the book is no longer extant. It was referenced at the time, but has since vanished without a trace. 3,000 years will do that. However, while the book of Jashar no longer exists, the book of Joshua mentions the book as a citation to support the claim of the long day. Even in those ancient times, a story about the sun stopping was hard to believe, so it was good to cite another source to ensure that the matter was thoroughly documented. Of course, the mention of the book of Jashar also raises an interesting question about chronology. When was the book of Jashar written? If Joshua was written in Joshua's lifetime and the book of Jashar records an event from David's lifetime centuries later, then how do we square that? Some have posited that this reference to the book of Jashar is a proof that Joshua was written much later than Joshua's own lifetime. But there are other explanations. First, we might take it that the book of Jashar was a growing record to which new information was added year after year as it was deemed necessary. All history books are like this, the Bible included. The New Testament was written after the Old. So maybe the book of Jashar had a volume that was completed in Joshua's lifetime and more volumes by David's lifetime. And maybe the book was used in Israel as a sort of historical standard, such that Joshua wanted to reference it. Another explanation might be that a scribal footnote was eventually adopted into the original text as canonical. Joshua might have written this original account of the long day, and a record was also made independently in the book of Jashar. Perhaps, and just perhaps, a later scribe made a note in the margins confirming the unbelievable tale of the long day for his readers by citing another source, and a later copyist included this note into the body of the text. At some point thereafter, this inclusion may have been universally accepted as being every bit as true and inspired from God as the original text. Obviously, Jesus accepted the text of Joshua as we have it here, so if this was an inclusion, I see no reason that we would not accept it as divinely inspired. And of note, that seems like an unlikely explanation to me, because the Israelites were very, very careful about the way that they copied their scriptures. It's unlikely that something like this could have been added. So I'm more prone to accept the first explanation, that the book of Jashar was a growing volume of work, as being the simplest explanation. And the simplest working explanation, which takes all of the facts into account, usually is the right one. So the book of Jashar was probably just a growing record of history which has since been lost. Whatever the case, the reference in the book of Jashar should be accepted as an extra-biblical source which helped to confirm the biblical account of an event of enormous magnitude, that the sun stopped relative to the horizon. And now for the lesson. And it is one which is apologetic in nature. God can intervene, and has intervened, in human history in incredible ways. When the atheist hears the story of the sun standing still, he scoffs and mocks. He says, that is impossible. The sun cannot stand still, physics will not allow it, and if the sun did stand still, everything would be thrown into chaos. And I think that the atheist fails here in a way which we have discussed before. He makes a presupposition about the world and then fits the facts to the presupposition. But the presupposition is wrong. He presumes that there is no God. That is his starting point. Then he looks at this story and says, since there is no God, this story is impossible, because there's nothing that could stop the sun. But you see the problem there. The story is only deemed to be impossible because of the presupposition. It is the bias to believe against God which causes the reader to disbelieve the story. The atheist here suffers from a confirmation bias. The scripture presents him with a historical record of an amazing thing happening. It is a thing which can only happen if there is a God. This is, in fact, an evidence for the existence of God. The sun stopped, and everyone on the battlefield saw it, and at least two historical records, Joshua and Jashar, recorded it, and the record was deemed credible and was important enough to have survived to the modern day. It is a compelling evidence that God exists. But atheism can't run on evidence. No evidence can be produced that there is no God. to prove that there is no God, an atheist would have to claim to have a comprehensive knowledge of everything that there is, and to know that none of the things that are God. But clearly no atheist can make that claim. Much to the contrary, I would posit that we see evidences of God everywhere, including here in today's passage. So the atheist reads this passage with his bias against God intact, and he discounts the evidence demonstrating God's existence. Christianity isn't like that. We don't run on blind faith like atheism does. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Faith is belief, and belief is based on evidence and reason. We don't have faith in God for no reason. We have faith in God because there is good evidence to believe in Him, and it is reasonable to do so. And here's an example. The Christian picks up a book of history, the Bible. The history book contains the written account of eyewitnesses who saw God interact with humanity. That is evidence of God's existence. Now, a person might weigh the veracity of the evidence. A person might say that Joshua was lying and that he deceived everyone on the battlefield and that they duped all of their children into believing this and that for thousands of years everyone who came before was so stupid that they fell for it. That all stinks of being a pretty outlandish conspiracy theory, frankly. I mean, really, how stupid would all these people have to be to accept that the sun had stopped if it hadn't? Could anyone have convinced you if you had been on the battlefield, and convinced everyone around you of that, such that you would have believed it, and so would your children? No way. The only way this story would have survived to the modern day is that it either happened or a whole lot of people agreed to make up a crazy lie for no reason. But we have no reason to doubt the account. There was no grand conspiracy. These people claimed that God did this. Others throughout the Bible claim that God did many other amazing things. And we can compare this to our world around us and see that it is not unreasonable. The world exists. Information exists. Life exists. It all came from somewhere. And most people who consider the world around them rightly come to the conclusion that it was all created by a higher power. So if there is evidence to believe that there is a higher power who created everything, and there are historical documents claiming that he interacted in history, why shouldn't we accept and believe that evidence? The only reason that we would disbelieve it is if there is some reason to believe that God can't stop the sun. But if the evidence tells us that God exists and that he is the creator of the earth and the sun, then why can't he stop them from moving relative to each other? If you made some marbles out of clay, don't you suppose you could stop them from rolling? And you can do that just because you have an innate knowledge of the working of physics, not because you have control over physics itself. But as I have asked before, where did physics come from? Who penned the laws of the universe? Who keeps them? Who enforces them? God does. Short of God, there's no compelling reason that gravity should pull things consistently. Gravity pulls because God says pull, and if he chooses to change the constant at which it does so, then it changes. E only equals mc squared because God decided it should, and because he keeps making it do that. God is the ultimate generator of all knowledge, the ultimate store of all knowledge, the ultimate processor of all knowledge, and that includes the knowledge of where the sun sits in the sky. The universe runs on God. Is there any reason then that God can't turn physics off if he wants to? Isn't he the one who turned physics on in the first place? So the atheist reads the passage, and he discounts the evidence in the passage that God exists. Why? Because he had decided he wouldn't accept it, even before he read it. That's why. We read the evidence, and we accept it. Why? Because reason and experience tell us that information exists, and information must have a source, and the existence of information demands the existence of a creator. And if there is a creator, he can control his creation. So whoever you are, when you come to this passage, let there be no doubt in your mind as to whether or not the sun stood still. Do not listen to those who tell you that you should accept it on blind faith without evidence, and do not listen to those who say that you should reject it as impossible. Neither is correct. You should believe it because it is a reasonable thing to believe, and because the evidence demonstrates that. And thus we conclude. The account of the sun standing still is a big claim, and for that reason we have taken the time to examine the account. In doing so, we have found that the stopping of the sun is certainly possible, when considered from genuine philosophical principle. That the historical record records, at least twice, that it did happen. that the description of the passage is accurate in scientific terms when we consider the physics of relative motion, and that the stopping of the sun was accomplished by divine intervention into the workings of normal physics. This was, in my estimation, likely accomplished by slowing the rotation of the earth, something which would not have been as catastrophic as some suppose, and by then using further intervention into physics to maintain normal function on earth as it happened. There is no real reason to doubt this, and there are many good reasons to believe it, and thus we accept the account, and we glorify God for displaying his great power in this amazing work. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.